The Investment Trust Show, brought to you by Henderson Global Investors, managing investment trusts since 1934.
Yes, it's time for our regular weekly programme, The Investment Trust Show, brought to you in association with Henderson Global Investors. Each week we explore the main features, factors and developments affecting investment trusts. And this week we're going to be looking at emerging market investment trusts. And to do that, we're joined in the studio by Sam Vecht, who's manager of the BlackRock Frontiers Trust and the BlackRock Emerging Europe Trust. And with us as ever is Share Radio's senior analyst, Ed Bauscher. Sam, I don't want to insinuate that you're a cowboy, but clearly you're investing in what amounts to the Wild West when it comes to markets. So tell us about your two funds in very general terms, and then we get into the nitty-gritty. I mean, even just explaining what the difference between an emerging and a frontier market is.
Yeah, it's more often the Wild East, actually, given the countries that we invest in. But thinking about it very, very roughly, there are about 190 members of the United Nations. About 20 or so of those are classified by index provider MSCI as developed. So obviously the UK, the US, Germany, etc. About another 20 or so of those are classified by that index provider as emerging, probably most famously China, Russia, Brazil, India. And there's a further 20 or so that are classified by that index provider as frontier. So countries like Nigeria, Pakistan, Argentina, Romania, and quite a few others. Mm. And I think the attractions of both sets of those emerging and frontier markets really surround the fact that these countries, and more importantly, the companies they're in, are growing considerably faster, typically, than the companies that we have listed in the UK. Of course, there is greater risk associated with these countries and these companies, but we are, of course, focused on the risk and return, and typically they are somewhat correlated.
Mm. Fascinating. Now, the Emerging European Trust, that's been going, for 20 years or more. So are some of the emerging countries there now considered more mature countries or not?
Yeah, we took over management of this particular investment trust in 2009. So just coming up to our 8th anniversary, it was managed elsewhere before that. Yes, some of these countries really have emerged and transformed quite significantly over that period of time. Poland, Hungary, the Czech Republic, core members of the European Union today, a far cry from how they were perceived in the mid-90s. So there's been a lot of transformation in these countries, but still these markets do carry higher return and higher risk than mainstream markets.
Mm. Now, obviously, these are the sort of markets that private investors would find it very difficult to invest in on their own, and probably would be advised by most people that it's not even very sensible trying to invest on their own. So clearly doing so through an investment trust is a very sensible way. But you pointed out just then that the risks are greater. Regulations probably are less advanced than in more developed countries. There's the problem of corruption. There's the problem of political instability. So how do you assess these risks? Because clearly it's one thing just thinking that a business might actually do incredibly well, but if you're not ever going to be able to get your money back out again, then that's clearly a risk too great.
Clearly, the focus of much of the media attention of the challenges of investing in these markets surrounds all those negatives like corruption, like that the assets might be stolen. But actually, in practice, the most common issue is one of investment governance, which doesn't really get the attention it deserves, but it really is the big issue. When a company generates an operating profit because they've been successful in whatever they do in producing their widgets, what do they do with that cash flow? Does it go back to shareholders in the form of a dividend, or does it go into the next mall, the next factory, the next mine that perhaps is a permitted investment, but possibly doesn't make economic sense? That is the big issue. It's investment governance rather than corporate governance. How companies choose to reinvest the cash flows they generate. That's the really big issue in emerging and frontier markets.
And how knowledgeable do you need to be about these countries? How often do you go and visit them, for instance? I mean, you know, I find it difficult enough to understand what's going on in our country at times. There are obviously a great many countries within these two different portfolios. Do you need to actually go and look at some of the businesses you're investing in?
Absolutely. We spend, our entire team spend a lot of time on the ground. I currently have one colleague in Vietnam and one has just come back from Kazakhstan, and I'm on my way to Dubai and Kuwait next week, and was in Kenya last week. It sounds very glamorous. us. But at times, it really is really quite tough at times. Just seeing the companies going out to see their factories, one has to spend a lot of time on the ground to meet customers, to meet suppliers, to meet competitors, to get the big picture of what's really going on. So we all spend a lot of time travelling and seeing our investments and also seeing the companies we don't invest in.
Mm. Were you particularly interested in overseas markets before you took up the job?
I've always been interested both in seeing the world, travel and investments. They're sort of long-term passions of mine going back to when I was a kid. So I was very happy to be able to blend both my interest in the world and my interest in finance in sort of the form of one job.
Before we drill down and look at the two different funds, let's perhaps look at frontier and emerging markets in general. I mean, we're living in a world in which the conventional markets in Europe particularly and United States are hitting new record highs. We also are in a world where interest rates may be starting to move up. Now, we read a lot about emerging market debt and how when interest rates do start rising again, particularly as so many debt are denominated in a rising dollar, they could pose problems. So what's the general, if you can actually treat all this as being a general thing, what is the general outlook then for frontier and emerging markets?
Well, I think the first thing to say is exactly as you pointed out, many Western markets are hitting new all-time highs every single day. That's a very stark contrast to what we have in both emerging and frontier markets, where these markets hit all-time highs in 2007. We've had a lost decade in emerging and frontier markets. It will take us some time just to regain those highs. We're probably 30, 40% away in some cases from those highs in 2007. So whereas we've had a bull market probably since 2009 in the Western world, that's really not been the case in most emerging and frontier markets. And as regard the point about interest rates going up and the dollar strengthening, there are clearly some countries that the companies and indeed sort of the inhabitants therein have borrowed a lot of money in dollars. And if the dollar's to go up against those local currencies, that will present a problem. However, those really aren't the majority of countries, definitely not in frontier markets, where many of the corporates have had no access to global financial markets. They haven't been able to borrow. And also in many emerging markets, the debt is denominated locally or is owed to locals, China being a most noticeable example in that regard.
Emerging and perhaps not frontier markets, but emerging markets tend to sort of follow with some lag developed markets, or is there no real correlation between them at all?
Historically, they used to act as a sort of a deeply cyclical part of the investment universe. That's definitely not been the case over the last 5 years, as the S&P has gone to all-time highs and they really haven't participated. As you said, frontier markets are a totally different kettle of fish because the investors that invest in frontier markets are typically local. And therefore, the people that invest in Nigeria aren't those that invest in Kazakhstan. The people that invest in Bangladesh aren't those that invest in Sri Lanka, however close they happen to be. And as a result, interestingly enough, frontier markets are fairly low volatility, lower volatility than the FTSE when you put them all together, because they don't correlate together. And that often surprises people. Emerging markets, on the other hand, often have similar types of investors, people sitting in London, sitting in New York, sitting in Hong Kong, who determine the prices of these markets. And therefore, the correlations between emerging markets are much higher, and therefore the volatilities of those markets are typically higher.
I mean, why are those people who are investing in, people in London looking at their screens who are interested in emerging markets, why do they invest there but they don't go near frontier markets? Is it just that they perceive as the risk as being too high, or are there not actually that many companies to invest in, or the value of those companies isn't that high?
I think it's a learning process. I think for many people, the idea of investing in a Bangladesh or a Kazakhstan is quite a challenge. And there are fairly few stocks in each of these markets compared to what would have in a China or in India or in a Korea. So there are no economies of scale for the fund manager in doing this in many cases. So I think it's a real challenge for some people to understand frontier markets, to get their head around the political nuances of each of these countries. Whereas some of the more mainstream like emerging markets like a Brazil, like in India, are much better understood to the average investor.
Fascinating. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have a look at the individual funds, the BlackRock Frontiers Trust and the BlackRock Emerging Europe Trust. We're talking to the manager of the funds, Sam Vecht.
The Investment Trust Show, brought to you by Henderson Global Investors, managing investment trusts since 1934.
I'm Dr. Sam Vecht, who's manager of the BlackRock Frontiers Trust and the BlackRock Emerging Europe Trust. With us, as ever, is Share Radio's senior analyst, Ed Bauscher. You want to give us some performance figures?
Yes. So Sam co-manages two trusts, as we've already said. One of them is the BlackRock Frontiers Investment Trust. So these performance figures are for net asset value, the value of the underlying portfolio, not the share price. Over 1 year, up just over 34%. That's 6 out of 11 in its sector. Over 3 years, up 37.3%. 5th out of 10 in the sector. Over 5 years, up just over 97%. And then looking at the Emerging Europe Trust, over 1 year, up 50.9%. That's second out of two in the sector. Over 3 years, up 31%. That's first out of two. Over 5 years, up 14.3%. That is first out of two.
Okay, so, Sam, let's look first of all then at the Emerging Europe Trust. What sort of country are we talking about? I mean, Russia's a pretty heavy part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's Russia, Turkey, Hungary, Czech, Poland, Greece. And then some of the frontier markets like Romania, Kazakhstan, Baltics, Balkans as well.
Mm. And I'm quite intrigued by the sector weighting, that 40% of the trust is in sort of general finance, followed by energy, which perhaps you might expect with some of those countries. Why is finance so important and such an attractive investment?
I think it's two aspects. It's where we are in the cycle. We're big fans of cyclical value across emerging and frontier markets today. Unlike the developed world, we are seeing a cyclical pickup in the economies in many of these countries. And we think financials are a good way of playing that in many of the places that we invest. And it's also worth highlighting, unlike in the developed world, where perhaps financials all sort of move together, in many parts of the emerging and frontier universes, they are sort of non-overlapping with gesture. They move in their own particular way, specific to their countries. So it's not like, Turkish financials and Greek financials move together. They're quite geographically proximate, but they really don't move together. They're very much driven by their own political and economic situations within those countries.
So you're not looking for particular areas to invest in each country you treat entirely separately.
Correct. And it's really important to highlight that when we think about a country, in addition to spending a lot of time on the ground and seeing the companies, it's really important for us that we have a top-down as well as a bottom-up view. So for us, if there is something going wrong, and it's a direction of travel that's important, if there's something going wrong with politics, with macroeconomics, with fixed income, or with the currency, then one really has to question whether one's going to have any equity exposure, and vice versa. Of course, it's really important for us to have a positive view on the direction of travel, not the absolute positioning of those issues.
So there are any countries that feel the direction of travel definitely is going the wrong way at the moment?
Not very many, actually, interestingly enough. Perhaps just since we talked about frontiers, I think, one country which has definitely been challenged, and we definitely want to be excited by that country in the future, but is having challenges at the moment, would be Nigeria, where the currency has been pegged, and that's actually limited investment opportunities in the country. I think if we look at examples elsewhere in Africa, let's say, as to Egypt, when the peg was removed and the country moved to a free float, there was a significant investment opportunity there. So we'd love to have more in Nigeria, but the current situation around the pegged currency probably sort of limits our abilities there. Elsewhere, most of the countries, not all of them, are moving in the right direction. And that's really in part a function of the very challenged economic situations that many of these have been in. And I guess nothing like a crisis to drive appropriate actions.
Well, let's talk a little bit then about the Frontiers Trust, the BlackRock Frontiers Trust, and what sort of countries there, because you have a regional weighting of what is it, so Asia, including Japan, European, emerging, Latin America, Middle East, Africa, but not necessarily saying what the individual nations are. You've mentioned a few in passing.
Yeah, so the biggest countries today include Argentina. They would include Romania, Pakistan, Kazakhstan as well. And Kuwait. Those would be amongst the biggest countries there that we're interested in. We've long been cautious about Kuwait, but we sense that perhaps things are changing. Argentina had a very important change of government 15, 18 months ago, which has very much catalysed a recovery in the economy and a change for the good there. Kazakhstan, an extremely cheap market where we can find individual companies that are doing really quite well. In Romania, 2016, the first really significant year of growth since 2007. So each of these countries, their own story, their own companies, very much driven by local factors, but all of them interesting.
And if people do invest in these funds, do they just find out once a year what changes you've made? Because it actually sounds as if there are stories to tell all the time. I think if I were a holder of either of these trusts, I would be quite intrigued to know what you were doing.
Yeah, so we put out a monthly statement to the Stock Exchange detailing all our countries and our top 10 holdings and, of course, all the sectors and the sectoral weights. So we do this on a monthly basis. We also disclose our entire portfolio with a three-month lag every quarter. So if investors really want to understand what's going on, that's all accessible.
You just said if you're a holder, Simon, it's jogged my memory. I should actually declare that I am a holder. Have a small holding in Sam's Frontier Investment Trust. Had them for about a year now. And I think I've got the holding because I like the idea of the fact that, you know, the shares in this trust don't tend to move in the same direction all the time as other markets. So that's a really, really nice thing about it. But equally, regardless of what Sam has said, he said lots of sensible things today. I still have this in the high risk part of my portfolio because I do worry these countries. There's a lot of political risk there and there are things that could go wrong. And the fact that they don't always move in the cycle with the rest of the markets is great, but they can still go down, maybe just at a time when everything else is going up.
What I'm intrigued by is the idea that so many of these countries do have some form of stock market, that they are using equity as a way of raising funds. Do you find that almost every country in the world now does tend to have a stock market?
Well, as I think I said earlier, that, you know, there are 194 members of the United Nations. I would say there's probably 90 of those that really don't have any functioning stock market. Many of them are trying to build a stock market, but it's very difficult to see how something like Laos is going to get a stock market of scale. I think it has 4 listed equities today. It really wouldn't be our focus. But there are some countries that have really made some very big strides to open themselves up to foreign investors, to ensure that results are put out in English, to ensure that the results of companies are put on stock exchange websites in a very timely manner. Saudi Arabia, for example, not a country many people often think of in terms of transparency, is one of the best in the world in this regard, made very significant strides over the last decade in this regard. Oman, another country often viewed by people as just as a wonderful tourist destination, which indeed it is, but also a place where there's quite a degree of transparency. I think one has to change auditors every 4 years to ensure appropriate production of accounts. So I think if one looks into each of these countries, one can discover gems. Of course, as mentioned earlier, there are significant risks, not limited to, but definitely including political risks in many of these countries.
I can't help wondering, where on earth do you find to go on holiday?
Well,
without a stock exchange, I imagine your wife would like.
The Brecon Beacons was the last place I went on holiday, and it absolutely rained down. But it's still beautiful.
And do you have what do you do about language? Because presumably, when you're going to these places, you're looking for the downsides as well as the upsides. People will always tell you a glowing story, and you've got to try and find out whether it's true or not. I don't imagine you speak all these languages possibly. So how do you cope and make sure you can do your research properly and not have the wool pulled over your eyes?
Yes, sadly, I do not speak all the languages of all the countries we invest in. That would be a remarkable achievement to do so. What we typically find is that, number one, the international language of business is English. And so in the vast majority of countries, the business meetings we hold with companies are held in English without any translator, thankfully. There are certain countries where it's more challenging and certain companies where it's more challenging. And there we will rely on translation efforts or indeed in the fact we've got a very diverse team who speak a multiplicity of languages. And I think what's equally important is to spend time seeing the competitors of companies and understand the entire food chain and the entire structure of a market. One often learns much more about Company A from Company B than one learns from Company A itself, because managements can be promotional, and there's always a certain degree of creativity that goes with management meeting potential investors.
Now, we talked about the regions that you invest in, some of the countries. We didn't actually talk about sectors. But again, for the Frontiers Trust, as with the Emerging Europe Trust, finance is the biggest sector, 35%. Are these for the same reasons as you said before?
Absolutely, and it's even more true in frontier markets. You know, the Kuwaiti financials have pretty much no correlation with Argentinian financials. So it is the same lack of correlation and the same point of where we are in the cycle that attracts us in many of these countries. The good thing about frontier markets is that beyond financials, you really can find a wealth of interesting opportunities in consumer staples, in consumer discretionary sectors. It's all about the price one pays for these assets. There's no one way to win in emerging or frontier markets. It's the price one pays for the assets. It's the price one pays for the currency. And the golden rule is always buy cheap currencies, buy cheap equity markets, and you've got a good chance of actually making money. Buying themes, stories about the emergence of the middle class or whatever, it's really good to talk about those things at the bar, but sometimes they're overpriced and that's always a dangerous place to be.
And do you rate the cheapness of shares in exactly the same way as you would if they were in a more developed market?
Yes, but obviously they have to be cheaper than they would be in the developed market because the risks, as mentioned, are higher. So you would expect stocks in emerging and frontier markets to trade at a PE discount to the developed world. That said, today, that discount is very high compared to historical standards, especially given where we are in the cycle. Margins are very depressed in the emerging markets and in frontier markets. Obviously, in places like the US, they're at all-time highs.
Mm. What about, you mentioned the cheapness of some of the currencies. What about the sort of massive devaluation of sterling after the Brexit voters? Does this cause you any particular problems? Do you hedge or do you simply ignore that in your calculations?
So we think of ourselves as dollar investors. So people who've invested in our investment trust have done actually quite well over the last year because the pound has gone down. So we focus on returns in dollars. And if we think there is something wrong in the outlook for a currency, like I indicated with Nigeria, where I mentioned, I think, there's significant downside if the current peg were to break, then we would be very reluctant to have exposure to such a country in any form because a lot of any upside can be wiped away by changes in the currency.
Mm. Absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much indeed for coming in and talking to us. That's been Sam Vecht, who's the manager or co-manager of the BlackRock Frontiers Trust and co-manager of the BlackRock Emerging Europe Trust. It sounds like it's worth actually reading your report and accounts, even if you don't necessarily want to invest. But thank you very much for talking to us. Also with us in the studio, Ed Bauscher, our senior analyst. That's it for this edition of the Investment Trust Show, brought to you in association with Henderson Global Investors.
At Henderson Global Investors, we believe in helping people to make informed investment decisions by sharing our knowledge. We are a proud sponsor of the Investment Trust Show on Share Radio, and we currently manage a range of 13 investment trusts in a wide range of sectors, geographies, and markets across the globe. Visit us at hendersoninvestmenttrusts.com. Henderson Global Investors is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority to provide investment products and services.